This session is about how to read a play, even if you're not an actor, or even if you've never read a play before. One of the things I'm going to be focusing on a lot this week and for the next 2 weeks is reading plays and hopefully doing some public reading of plays, and just gathering people together to read plays, because I don't think it's something that's done very much anymore. There are play reading groups throughout the country, but it's not, people don't normally choose to read a play. How many people have read a play in the last week? In the last week? Okay.
One of the first plays in my life, but I read it this last week.
Okay. In the last month?
In the last two months,
okay. But it's something that generally people don't do for one reason or another as casual enjoyment reading. People will read plays in school because they're required to read plays. I think that's probably where most of us read our first play, because we were sitting in a class and the teacher said, let's go through this play and read this play. But as reading for enjoyment, we don't often do. And there's some real reasons for that that I hope we can play around with today and discuss. And we're going to do some reading today in class, and some of the work has not even been written yet, so we're going to be doing some of that too. But to start off, I think, and I'm assuming nothing. I'm assuming we're all starting at a fairly novice base, which I feel I do every time I approach theater, and I've been teaching theater for a number of years, and I've been a professional director and an actor. And so theater is my curse or my blessing, depending upon how you look at it, because it's what I do and what I like to do most in life. It's an avocation that became a vocation, that became a calling, that became a focus of what I do. But every once in a while, it's important for me to step back and just to redefine what I do. I put some terms up on the whiteboard that I'd like us to talk a little bit about, and your understanding of these particular terms and the differences between the terms. These top three terms, theater, drama, and play, are used quite interchangeably quite often. Somebody's doing a play. They're doing theater, they're doing drama. You go to play class or drama class or theater class, or you go to the theater, you go to see a play, on and on and on. And by the way, the only reason I'm spelling theater here is R-E, it's just my personal preference. It's either E-R-R-E. I think I grew up with a high school teacher calling it theater, so I think that's probably why. Theater somehow for me means the overall broad artistic response to what I do, the art that I'm involved in. But reactions to these words, theater, what kind of images does that mean? Does that word mean for you?
Ashland.
Okay, very specific place. Theater. Ashland. Probably theater with a capital T. Okay. Anybody else? What does it mean?
Costumes.
Okay.
It's the encompassing, it seems to me. The whole.
The overall.
What you were saying.
Okay.
Action.
Action. Okay. Anybody get a picture of a building immediately when they think of theater? Yeah. Because we call them movie theaters, we have movie theaters as well as theaters.
No, stage but I just like the picture of the inside of the building.
Inside the building.
Down from the back, but it's empty.
Empty?
Oh, it's empty.
Okay. Is there a stage?
Yeah.
stage and audience sitting in a certain way. Does the audience sit on one side of the stage? Does the audience sit on one side of the stage in your vision of theater and look at a theater at the end of the room?
Well,
or from a balcony down towards a stage?
Well, like, I would be standing under the balcony. Mm-hmm. But the balcony goes like in a circle.
And you're looking towards?
Right. You're like going down the center aisle.
Is there a curtain? And there's a center aisle.
Yes, it's a red curtain.
Okay, red curtain. Okay. Because people's perceptions of what just that physical space is really important. This word, does anybody know where this word comes from? Or the origins of the word theater? Do we have any idea? It's a Greek word, as most theatrical terms really come from Greek, because in Western culture anyway, we sort of begin the history of theater with the Greeks in 2500 BC, which was called the Golden Age of theater in Greece. And theater, as far as we know, began out of worship services, and which is one of the reasons that theater has always somehow been connected in a way with religion. I don't think it's highly unusual that churches are shaped very much like theaters, and there is that kind of ritual sense in church that in some cases it exists in theaters. I mean, churches quite often have center aisles too that you walk down. They don't have red curtains usually, but they usually have something in front that everybody focuses and raised platforms. But theater simply meant, comes from the Greek word theatron, which simply means a seeing place. And as far as we know, the earliest forms of theater in Greece were built around the centers of small villages or the threshing floors of small villages. Anybody ever been to Greece? Seen Greece? Well, Greece is very mountainous. And in mountainous countries, they would grow the grain, but they would have no place to thresh it. And the old form of threshing grain was simply to take a flail, which is a piece of wood attached by a leather thong to another piece of wood, and the wheat or whatever the grain was put on the ground, and you just beat that grain until the kernels fell off. And then you would pick up in what's called a winnowing basket. You'd put the wheat up and you'd throw it up in the air, bounce it up in the air, and of course the mountain winds would come along and blow the wheat, the chaff off, and you'd have what was left. But in the mountainous areas, they needed to find a flat place in order to do this. So they have a threshing floor. So if they had a mountainside, and I'm not an artist, I'm not next door, they would sometimes just fashion a flat area right on the edge of a mountain. You can imagine sort of what happens at various places in the village on the edge of a hill. A flat place, and on that flat place they would have the floor of the stage, and that eventually became a meeting ground for all the people, because they could sit on the side of the hill and watch somebody speaking to them down on that flat area with the mountain, with the open space behind them. And so eventually that developed into the first forms of amphitheaters, which were, if you travel to Greece, you can still see some of those early amphitheaters and ruins, which were shaped sort of like this on the edge of hills. And then there was a round circle in the center, which was called the orchestra. And that's where we get the term, if you sit on the lowest level in theater today, that's the orchestra seating, because that's the lowest flat area. They initially had an altar in the center of that, and behind that was a scene building, And that scene building was called the Scena, or Scene House. And it had two little wings, which were called the Pro Scena, which turned into Proscenium. Yeah. And you can see what happened to our stage. And we soon had a pit built here in the orchestra, which became the orchestra pit. And then a group of musicians sat in that orchestra pit, and they were called an orchestra. And that's where all those terms came from. And it's all Greek theater. And this form still structures, in many ways, a lot of our theater forms today, in many, many ways. So that's theater. What about the word drama? What kind of images come up with the word drama?
Serious.
Serious. Okay. Something is dramatic. Serious. Okay. What else?
Emotional.
Drama. Drama, if you think drama, it's heavy.
Climactic.
It has some sense, and again, the Greek word, according to Aristotle, was that you reach a catharsis. You have a major change that happens in you as you're watching plays. What else? Its origin, again, it's just these three letters, dra, which is Greek meaning to do, to have action. And that's all it means. It's an active sense, it's an active word. Drama means to do. Something is doing. Aristotle defined drama and dramatic action as people in action, whether that's mental action or physical action. There's something happening. And so drama is when we usually talk about the literature, we talk about dramatic literature. And I grant you, today when we talk about drama, we think serious and heavy. But it doesn't have to be. Drama, in its overall term, is both comic and serious, or a mixture of both. And it has that sense of action, that something happens. Nobody wants to go to a play where nothing happens. But that physical action doesn't always have to happen in the way that we think about Broadway musicals today, where there's lots and lots of spectacle and you've got to have a lot of visual, physical action. Or you have to have a movie like Die Harder, or and Hollywood seems to be caught up just in physical action rather than people in action. Okay, the final word, play. What does play mean to you? I just checked the Random House Dictionary this afternoon. Double check, there are 95 meanings for the word play. 95.
I think of the script, the actual literature.
Yeah, it's we think of a play as this is a copy of a play. And so we have that sense of play. But it also, its origin comes again from, this time not the Greek, but Middle Dutch or Middle English, play, which means to sing and dance for joy. Play. And when we think of kids playing, that's what that is, that sense of play, of fun, of enjoyment infused with life. Now, if you put all three of those words together, you've got really the essence of what theater and drama and play is all about, and it's all active. It's all action-oriented in terms of the visual, to see, to actually see something happening, to do, to have the action of play, which again settles itself into a script, which is a play. And sometimes I said at the teachers' staff meeting on Saturday, they asked me what I was going to do this week, and I said, I'm here to play. And I literally mean that in the sense of dancing and singing for joy because of this beautiful place, but also to share what drama has to offer. I sometimes joke that Martin Luther worked in music more than he did in drama, so that's why there's a strong emphasis in the Lutheran Church in singing rather than acting. And I often wonder, although Luther did like plays, I wonder if he had written some plays, if drama and theater would be more part of the worship process. But it's really important to always go back and connect with the basics of what you're doing. Then I have a question on the board, two spellings of a word, and this has to do with the script itself, the play, right? Which is acceptable? Which is the most common spelling? Do you know?
Second one.
Why? Anybody know?
Because it's a craft.
Yeah. And plays aren't written. Plays are made. Just like you have a wheelwright who makes a play. A playwright does not write a play. A playwright writes a play. He makes, or she makes the play. And that's a very important idea to keep in mind. And as we work through some of the things today and on Thursday, I'm going to be talking about Václav Havel, who's the president of Czechoslovakia, and I'm going to be reading some of his works and talking about the idea of a playwright as a politician and a political activist who went to jail. The idea of playmaking, that it's something that's really important and essential for life, is really important to me. I had a student at Cal Lutheran who was from Argentina, and he was involved in theater in Argentina during the days of the junta before the last election, in which many, many people disappeared, and among those many, many artists. And theater people were out at the forefront of the political movement in Argentina, and many of his friends just disappeared who were involved in theater. And for him, unlike many Americans, he feels that theater is vital and very, very important in terms of political life, in terms of living as human beings. And for me, in these days when we're talking, and I hope to next week talk a little bit about the crisis we have with the NEA, the National Endowment for the Arts, and censorship in the arts, it becomes a real issue. The artists, again, are on the front lines in many ways in struggling to maintain their art and their craft, and it is a craft. So, when you read a play, there's a whole history behind the craft of that play. But so often, and I don't know, maybe people that are still in school, and I worry about this as a teacher myself, one of my greatest concerns is that I'm beating theater to death, that I'm teaching theater in a way that students, my students and other students, are no longer able to look at the plays in the same way that I would like them to, from the sense of play. And as little kids, are playing and imagining whole worlds that crop up around them. And I think my best example is Shakespeare, because I think every high school student, I remember I dreaded Shakespeare in high school, because Shakespeare in high school was boring, and it was dull, and it was horrible. And Shakespeare for me didn't come to life until actually I was involved in a production of Shakespeare and actually got to act a role in Shakespeare. And then suddenly it came to life, because plays are meant to be seen. They're meant to have action. They're meant to play. They're not meant to sit in books and have somebody read them without any real response. That's why one of the important things I'm going to try to emphasize this week, and hope to involve you in today, and also involve other people during the week, is the actual oral reading of plays and words. Because I think so often, if we remove that sense of life from a play, we create a real dullness to it. I'm going to stop right now for a minute, and I would like, and this is a note to the tape people, that they can shut down if they want to for a couple of minutes. I want everybody to tear a piece of paper off that yellow pad and take a pencil if you don't have one. And on one piece of paper, if you need something to write on, I've got some books, and maybe we can get some books off the shelf there. What I want you to do is just spend a quick 5 minutes remembering a conversation that you had with someone, or a conversation that you heard between two people. Just a conversation you've had with someone, or a conversation that you heard between two people. It doesn't have to be very long at all. I don't want it to be much longer than the page you have. Just the beginnings of a conversation. And what I'm going to try to have you do is, I want you to remember as closely as you possibly can what was actually said. Try to remember what was actually said, and don't worry about trying to create art or drama. It can be as simple, it can be, hello, how are you? Did you like the coffee this morning? Wasn't Wes really funny? Whatever conversation you remember. It can be from in the last couple of days, or it can be another conversation that you heard or were involved in a week ago, or whatever. A conversation that's clear in your mind. And I'm just going to give you a couple minutes to... And I think we're back on tape again, if somebody's listening. When you read a play, what kinds of difficulties do you have when you read a play? When you're by yourself reading a play.
Visualizing the scene.
Keeping track of everyone who's still on and still and hasn't left. Remembering who is still on stage.
Yeah.
I have problems with how it's supposed to be read. Because if you're not seeing it and you haven't seen the person before, then you're not exactly sure how to respond, sarcastic or not, or what. Because you don't know what's in front either.
Okay. Okay, if you're seeing it for the first time, you really don't know. Anybody else?
Sometimes the language.
Especially
if it's a Shakespeare.
Yeah, especially. I mean, that's the thing, a single thing in Shakespeare that turns people off, because they go, I don't understand this. I just directed a production of Twelfth Night this spring at the university, and it was a strong, well-done production, but when the actors started it, they just hated it. And by the time they were through with it, they said, well, when can we do our next Shakespeare? Because it's like a whole new world opened up to them because of the language. That's a problem.
There are, and others too, of course.
Yeah.
Depends on the conversation and the play, the pinter plays or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sometimes it's really hard. And we're going to, I think later on when I do some of the Czechoslovakian drama, that's the difficulty there is in many cases when Václav Havel started writing, he wrote in the manner of Samuel Beckett, who was an absurdist playwright, and his style is very difficult sometimes to connect with, and a lot of plays have that going for them. Probably the most common experiences are some of the experiences you've said. It's keeping track of all the characters. I, after having read I don't know how many plays, 1 year I was hired by the Guthrie Theater in Minneapolis to be a play reader, and my job when I was in grad school was I got paid by the number of plays I read. So I think I read 1,000 plays during the year, and I got paid for recommending plays on. Most of it was purely horrible, and so I could discard those. I had to turn a little note in on every play, but I'd start reading, and I'd go, okay, I'm done with that. But part of the problem is just figuring out the characters. Now, who is that character? What is the character? Because when you read a novel in a short story, it's there, right? You get the description of what the person looks like. You get a description of the room, so you know what the setting looks like. Everything is spelled out for you. And in drama, it really isn't. Sometimes you get stage directions or notes before the scene, but in many cases, I don't know how many people know this, but many cases, those notes and those stage directions are not put in there by playwright. They're put in there after the production has appeared on Broadway or in a major theater, and they're copied from the first production by a stage manager. So you're not getting the playwright's real words. In some cases you do. If anybody knows the writing of George Bernard Shaw, Shaw would write 10 pages prior to his plays, beginning to give complete detail of what he wanted the production to be like, and most directors completely ignored him.
What's the idea?
What?
What's the idea behind that?
What was his idea?
Well, no, what would be the idea not to have the setting and,
Because, I think that's very pertinent to what I'm saying about plays and approaching plays on a reading standpoint. To view a play, and my favorite definition of what a play is that it's a blueprint. It's nothing more than a blueprint, an outline of a production. Why can Shakespeare keep being done year after year after year after year for 400 or 500 years? Why can Greek plays continue to be done since 2500 BC? Because each production, each director, each set of actors finds something totally new in the play, and that play becomes an entirely new production. A play is not complete in this form. I mean, the script is here, but this is only an outline. It's only a blueprint. And just like you can get an idea of what a house is like if you can read a blueprint, if you understand the technique of reading a blueprint, you can understand and envision what the complete structure is like. But you don't have all the details spelled out for you. But the difference between a good playwright, and this is where the craft of playwriting comes in, the difference between a good playwright and a bad playwright is that a good playwright can give you enough, very specifically in the dialogue, that you will have a sense of what's going on. You will have a sense of the structure. You will have a sense of the characters. You will know what those people look like, what they sound like, because it's there in the dialogue. So the only thing you can really trust is the dialogue. And that's why Shakespeare is so brilliant, because all we really have left, we really don't know what his plays look like on stage. We've got some records, we've got prop lists, we've got some historical data, but we really don't have a lot. Nobody was around to videotape. It's even worse with the Greek plays because those are in translation. We have no idea. Some vase drawings, but that's all. Everything else is purely conjecture. And so we don't know what it actually was like. We understand that in Greek drama they actually maybe danced and they maybe had music. We have no idea what the music was like. We have no idea what the costumes were like. But we have the dialogue. That's why the plays can still be done. So, with that in mind, what I would like to do is have some volunteers. And what I'm going to do is just read some dialogue. Now, this is your dialogue. And it'll be anonymous. I hope nobody put their name on their sheet. It can be an anonymous dialogue. And what I want you to do is, as you listen to these dialogues read, I want you to imagine what's happening. Try to envision who those people are that are talking, where they are, and what they're talking about. What is their action? What are they seeing? What are you seeing? All the rest. And it's just from dialogue. Just from the dialogue. Okay? Can I have some volunteers? Anybody? It's painless. One, two. Okay, good. Why don't you come up here, because I can't make copies of these real quickly. So. And I'll have a third person just draw anonymously. Pick a card, any card. Okay. Don't identify. Okay, now, this is the two characters are named Tess and Bethany. Why don't you do Tess, and why don't you read Bethany?
Okay.
I'll be Bethany.
You can be Bethany? Mm-hmm. Bethany, do you want some more milk?
No.
Are you all finished eating?
Yes.
Okay, let's wipe your face and hands. It's time to go to Narnia.
I don't want to.
Don't you want to go to Narnia? You had fun yesterday.
I don't want to go to Narnia.
You can play with the castle again.
The castle?
Yes, and you can play with the other kids.
Okay, I want to go to Narnia.
Okay, let's go.
Oh yeah, thank you. Let's applaud the act. Okay, now, tell me how much information you got. What kind of images came up? What we talk about often in drama is the given circumstances, which, if there are any reporters or any journalists here, they'll recognize the given circumstances as well. The who, the where, the what, and the when of the situation. In this particular situation, we're not concerned about whys particularly at this point. What kinds of things did you get from them?
It's an adult and a child.
An adult and a child. Okay, that was pretty easy. What were your clues? What were your clues in the dialogue, in the language itself?
Narnia.
Yeah. Narnia.
Wipe your face.
Let me wipe your face, unless it was an adult who was somewhat unable to wipe his or her own face. What else?
In the dialogue, you're saying it's...
Yeah, in the dialogue.
I don't want to go.
The childish...
That was the reading of it, too.
Yeah.
How did you know to read it like that?
That was very good.
I'm used to whining. I mean, not for myself necessarily.
Okay. Could you tell anything else about the type of people? I mean, you said whining. So your interpretation as an actor in this case was to make a decision about what kind of a kid that was. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, clearly the child didn't want, the person didn't want to go. At the beginning, it was in the morning, and you know, mm-hmm. the decision would be made here.
Okay.
This little program.
Where did this take place?
In the dining room.
Probably, or right after breakfast.
Yeah, and so we got the when as well, because we know in the context of this environment, when Narnia meets, if wipe your face, that would be around mealtime, it would have to be, it was very clearly set up for us. What about anything else about the what of this situation? Or anything else about the characterization?
I think I just I don't know where this is coming from, but like the mom was like trying not to like force it on the child. I mean, she was trying to make it her decision to want it and to enjoy this and know that this is like her choice, but you know, and to convince her also. So it was just kind of like the understanding mother and the child that is reluctant, but.
It had action. It had a beginning, middle, and end. Actually, it was a complete play. It was a complete play on the one page. It had a beginning, middle, and end to it. It was nice, complete. It was resolved at the end, and it was all taken care of. Okay, let's have another one. Let's have another one. Two more readers. Two other readers. This is okay. There and there. Okay. And we'll go over here to draw this time. Draw a blind wall. Draw a
magic card.
Okay. Okay, it's a short dialogue. A and B, why don't you be A, why don't you be B? Okay?
Okay.
Here we go.
Will I
wait?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm thinking about the Lyman Glacier trip.
I'd love to see a glacier. How far is it?
I think about 18 miles. It's an overnight trip. Supposed to be strenuous.
Why don't we try it?
Okay. Okay, sure. Now, tell me what you learned about given circumstances of this situation.
They're both healthy and athletic.
Okay, because again, we know the context. Imagine the context of what is included because we know what Lyman Lake means.
It's supposed to be strenuous.
Strenuous.
I'd say at the bulletin boards because that's what it says. The thing up there.
Okay, so we can even place it.
Or at the high
So there are a couple of possible settings. If we were going to direct this, you could make your choice where you wanted this little scene to take place. What about the characters? Do we know anything about the people? Would
they
you
read.
Hmm?
They're looking at the, if they are looking
yeah,
at
so we know they're at least old enough to read.
Yeah. They know each other.
Yeah.
They know each other, so there's a relationship there. There's that context of we, which actually means something. Why don't we do this? Mm-hmm. So you can make certain interpretations about what's going on. But even from the dialogue, we get a sense. Do you start visualizing things? Are you starting to see things as you read, which we always do when we read? One more, and then we'll love it. Two more readers. Okay, we've got it. Good. And why don't we pick a break there? Okay. Oh, really short. Okay. Okay, A and B. You guys got off easy.
You interviewed.
A, B, I guess.
Are you taking last day pictures?
No, I'm taking first day pictures.
I hate saying goodbye.
Okay.
Wow.
A little absurdist piece. Okay, what kinds of things did you learn? Again, given the circumstances.
I hate taking pictures.
Taking pictures.
They're taking pictures.
Somebody's taking pictures.
So that means a meeting.
And they don't know each other well, because they didn't, the one asking didn't know how long the other one had been here.
Anything else?
The one sleeping?
Yeah.
Yeah.
One sleeping. So we could, that could be a comic scene, or it could be a serious scene, depending upon how you played it and what you wanted to say with the play. Now, again, if we had two women reading the scene, you'd get a different perspective on the same scene. If in the first scene, if she would have read the Narnia thing, and she would have read the what we presumed was an adult character, that would totally change the picture and the focus of what was happening in the play. And not necessarily wrong in terms of the discussion that was heard. I'm just interested to know very briefly, from if anybody wants to volunteer that they wrote the scene, to now tell us where that remembered dialogue happened.
That last one?
Is that yours?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was just up at 3:45 at the sign up there.
And you heard this comment?
No, that was, I made the comment. I go, are those last day pictures you're taking? Because he's leaving tomorrow. He said, no, they're first day pictures. I need to say goodbye. He said the last part also, but... He said some other too, but I couldn't remember. He's a very comical person.
So it was a comic.
It was more humorous.
Yeah. Okay. What about anybody else who wants to buy?
I wrote the Narnia one.
One of your grandchildren?
Yeah, one of the little girls.
Yeah.
And it was her mother, and it was Teresa and Bethany. My daughter and my granddaughter this morning.
So it really was
yeah,
that
it was
mother
definitely mother, exactly was. What she interpreted to be.
And
I wrote the other one, and it took place in the ice cream shop. And I wasn't finished. There was more of the conversation, but I just ran out of time.
So did it?
We decided not to go because it was a 2-day affair, and we just didn't feel we wanted to devote 2 days to it. Besides, we were a little bit frightened by the strenuous stuff.
And probably if you'd gone on,
that would have come out
in the dialogue. And I limited this dialogue particularly. But we do remember. And playwrights, by the way, the process of playwriting uses this same technique quite often. Remembered dialogue. It's said that good playwrights have good ears, that they hear people speak. You know, if you sit down, I think one of the saddest things, if somebody sits down to write a play or write dialogue, what they try to do is sound literate. And if you read plays, the best plays are those plays that sound like people talk. The worst kind of plays is translations, bad translations are the worst kind of plays to read, because in bad translations you get a really non-speaking kind of dialogue. And I think good plays function with a real sense of the characters and the dialogue. So remembered dialogue is a real source. The other is imaginative dialogue. Obviously people create characters, people in their minds, and good playwrights say these characters start to live by themselves and take on a life of their own. And good playwrights that I've worked with get very jealous about every single word in a play. I've written some plays myself, and I feel that, but as a director, I feel more strongly that if I want to change the blueprint a little bit, I sometimes do. I change William Shakespeare if it's necessary to happen. Just like if you're building a house, you can ask for changes. The best kind of working relationship between a director and a playwright is one of give and take, and that's why directors and playwrights spend a long time working on plays together and crafting plays. I want to finish today by reading the beginning of a short scene from a play that I like a great deal, and it's a play that has come to have a lot of meaning in the last year. It's a play called A Walk in the Woods. How many are familiar with this play? It's by a playwright named Lee Blessing, who is based out of St. Paul, Minnesota, but this play has played in Broadway, on the West Coast, East Coast, around the country. I saw it in London with Sir Alec Guinness and Edward Harriman, and I was absolutely moved by it. It's a play that I think explains itself very simply, and it shows that action can happen without much happening, without much going on. If, since you're the only gentleman that hasn't read, will you care to read with me? Now, I'm just going to read a little bit at the beginning. We don't have much time left. I'm going to read a little bit of the first scene, and I want you to see as much as you can, and you've never seen this play before, so it's going to be a cold reading. And I'm not going to set it up for you at all, and just see if you can get a sense of what happens in the play. So I'm not going to read any stage directions or anything else. We're just going to do the dialogue. And again, see if you can get a sense of what this play is all about and what the focus of this play is all about. Okay, I will read Botvinnik. So, I told him, this was your reporter, you understand, a network reporter. I told him, when Brezhnev was in power, he always began Politburo meetings by saying, the survival of the Soviet Union depends on total annihilation of America.
You told him that?
How was I to know he'd believe it? He actually filed that report with his network. It was nearly broadcast, but finally someone had the sense to ask him, who told you that? Andrei Botvinnik? And they canceled it. They know I make jokes. That reporter, I think, is covering now restaurants. Do you like this place? Shall we sit?
Do you think we shall stop?
Why not?
Well, we spoke of this as a walk in the woods.
We are walking. We are sitting. We are walking again.
But the reporters?
Reporters expect us when they see us. They love us for us not to be on time. Much speculation, more column inches. Come, sit down.
All right.
Fine. Now we are sitting. This is good. The trees are lovely in the late summer here, so full. You came at a good time.
It's beautiful.
Have you been to Switzerland before?
No.
Well, you must enjoy the lake, the mountain trails, and so on and so forth.
I will, thank you.
Mr. McIntyre loved the trails. He was very fond of hiking.
Yes, I know.
He told you?
Yes.
How is he doing, Mr. McIntyre?
Very well. He's with a law firm in New York now.
Really? He's not back at the Arms Control Agency?
No. He thought he'd give the private sector again.
Ah, the private sector. Wonderful thing you Americans have to think. A refuge from government service. Ah, McIntyre, they come and they go, eh?
Does it bother you?
Not when someone as pleasant as you is sent to replace him.
Thank you very much.
You are very welcome.
We're beginning to sound like a pair of diplomats.
We are a pair of diplomats.
Well, negotiators.
And negotiators, of course.
I mean, that is our primary function.
Yes,
Diplomacy comes second. In a sense, it's really someone else's job.
If you insist.
I don't insist. I'm just trying to be clear, that's all.
You are clear.
Tell me, why have you taken a walk in the woods?
What do you mean?
I mean, why? Does your government have something to communicate to us about our new proposal, or...
No, nothing like that. There are many ways to discuss a proposal. We don't have to come out here.
It's a very good proposal.
I know it is.
Very good.
Absolutely. On my side, we are all in disarray, believe me. But that's not why we are here. Today, I only want you to see the woods.
To see the woods?
Yes, and talk, simply. Man to man. Machines must show you that.
Man to man.
The woods are very useful. For months, we will be trading proposals across the table. Here, there is no table. We can relax, ignore things, talk about trees, lakes, whatever.
I see. The reporters will be disappointed.
Why?
They think we're out here getting all the real work done. So, you're not interested in doing any work out here?
What do you call work? Only what you do at the table? This is valuable too.
What? Sunning ourselves on the bench?
Tell me, do you plan to be a very formal negotiator?
Should I be?
No, please, anything but formal. It was one thing I didn't like about McIntyre. We negotiated for 2 years, then he never changed his position.
The American position changed?
No, his position. Sitting there at the table, he always sat straight up. For 2 years, he never relaxed. He felt it gave him a moral advantage. It didn't. He looked like a dog waiting for his supper.
I'll tell him that.
Would you? It's the one thing I think he should change. Formality allows many things, but it does not allow friendship.
I think formality...
Formality is simply anger with its hair combed. I could never make a friend out of McIntyre. It was a great disappointment. 2 years he sat there, 1 meter away, over 100 sessions. We never became friends. After all, what does he say that about me?
It is good. Do you think farm negotiators to become friends?
Someone has to.
But is that, strictly speaking, our job?
Perhaps it isn't. You like trees here. They are very neutral. Okay, we'll stop right there. What kind, early on in the play, and I'm sorry to catch you like that, but again that shows, thank you very much, again that shows what a playwright does for you, right? What kinds of picture do you get? What kinds of things did you learn from that reading?
It's too bad.
Two men?
I'd say maybe a park, because they were sitting.
It's in Geneva.
Yeah. Switzerland.
One's Russian and one's an American.
Okay. Anybody disagree with that? No, that's what they are. The one. Anything else? What do they do? Anything more about
them? They're diplomats.
Any more specifically?
Trying to be secret, I guess.
The Russian has been at this, in this position, much longer than the American, who's a new person replacing McIntyre.
Okay. And what do you think they're doing? What's their overall job?
To be businesslike and not personal.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. Setting up a meeting of the chief executives or something like that. They're not arms control, I don't think, because McIntyre went back to the arms control agency.
Well, Geneva's UN headquarters in Europe.
It's
could
the
be
two heads of state.
Is it the heads of state?
Yeah.
Well, no, and you, again, if you'd go on, but you're close. I mean, they are, in fact, arms negotiators, meeting in
in Geneva, because that's where the arms negotiation takes place. This particular play came about from a newspaper article which talked about the American negotiator and the Russian negotiator going for a walk in the woods together.
But that was the heads of state that did that.
Yeah.
In the woods.
Yeah, yeah. In this case, it's the arms negotiators with the power to do anything. The whole play is based upon several walks in the woods that takes place over several years. And the comic and serious dealings between these two men and the relationship that develops. You can already, just in the very beginning of the play, start to see a relationship. The young man who is caught up in the idealism of doing his job, and the older man who has kind of a relaxed attitude about it. The one man is focusing on working, and the other man is pulling back a little bit. But it's through the oral reading and the sense of that. It was my choice to add a Russian dialect, and which threw him off right at the beginning, and he came on with a dialect until he discovered. That he was American. Well, he sees an American of foreign descent, and he still speaks. Kissinger had a dialogue.
Yeah.
But what those kind of choices add is the kind of choices that any script reader can add. And you made the choice, and then you made the adjustment to shift away from it. And you start getting a sense. And it may not be perfect. I think that's too often the reason that people don't read plays out loud is they're afraid that you said something about not making the right choice because you don't know about those characters. Well, when do you find out about the character in a play? You don't find out about the character at the beginning of the play. You find out about the character at the end of the play, because it's like an onion. You peel more and more and more and more away until you get the sense of the characters. And then you have this whole heap of onion peels, and that's the character made up of all those bits, and you get those bits all the way through a play.